Hi there. Thanks for downloading the Garden Fork Radio podcast. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. If you're new to the show, Garden Fork Radio is an eclectic DIY maker, how-to food, gardening, cooking, beekeeping show. I make videos every week that I post on YouTube and on our site. And I also have the Garden Fork Radio where I can have friends and interesting people on the show to talk about what I think is interesting and I hope you guys find interesting as well. Today we have Bob from the YouTube channel I Like to Make Stuff. He also has a website, iliketomakestuff.com. And I really admire Bob because he's just like you and I. He's just a regular guy and he's taken something and run with it and done really well with it. And he makes his projects, they're brilliant and yet approachable.
Welcome to I Like to Make Stuff. I'm Bob, and I like to make all sorts of stuff. I'm not an expert in anything that I do, but that's kind of the point. In fact, a lot of times I'll do things for the first time on camera, so you get to see my mistakes and hopefully how to fix them. In my projects, I show you every step, and that's because I want to demystify the process. I want to show you that it's not that hard, and I want to inspire you to make the stuff that you want to have. I've got playlists of all different types of projects and a show called Maker 101. It helps you get started by showing you the fundamental tools and the basic skills that you need to make stuff. No matter what your skills are, no matter where you're starting, everybody can be a maker, including you.
So join me now with Bob, all right? Here we go. So everyone, we're here with Bob. Thanks for taking a minute, Bob.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So you're in your shop right now hanging out, and I noticed a while ago you did a video about you welded together a frame, and I just bought a flux core welder, and I was curious about your thoughts about if people were going to buy a welder, which one you would think they could get?
As far as like brand and stuff, I don't really have any particular, you know, recommendation for anything. But as far as the difference between like a gas and a flux core, most of the MIG welders that I'm aware of can do both. It's more about like, you know, if you purchase the flux core wire, then you don't need the gas versus if you don't, then you do need the gas. But I think most machines can do either one. In my understanding, I mean, I have honestly a pretty limited understanding of welding because I'm pretty new to it as well. But from my understanding, the flux core stuff has a deeper penetration, but it's messier. And then the gas shielded stuff has a nicer finish. You know, it's not quite as like spattery and all that. I've done both, a little bit of both, and I enjoy the gas welding a little bit more. I'm not sure why. Like, I can't quite, you know, put a pin in it, but I seem to enjoy that more. Now, it's handy to have some flux core wire around because I run out of gas on occasion.
Yeah.
And then you just can't weld neatly anyway. So,
I got the flux core. It was on sale at Harbor Freight had a sale and it like knocked a bunch of money off the price. And I thought, you know, and I read online that they said that this particular model wasn't too bad. And I'm like, I'll get this. And then if I'm really into it, I'll upgrade to a nice MIG, but I usually weld in the garage. So I thought I've read that flux core is a messier, smokier process, but I was like, well, I'll just do that. And it's worked out for me. I mean, you know, like I had to repair my lawnmower and it worked pretty well for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, just depending on what you're doing with it and what your conditions are, as far as I know, it's like a perfectly good option, you know, it's just an option.
Did you take any kind of welding class or just kind of self-taught or?
No, I'm just kind of self-taught. I got started welding probably about 10 years ago. I bought an old Vespa, early 60s scooter from Italy.
Yeah.
And the floor pan was completely rusted out. And so I ordered a new floor pan and cut out the old one. And this was like my first introduction to any kind of metalwork at all. So I learned how to, you know, cut out big sections and then put this whole pan in. And really, I was just kind of like spot welding it or tack welding it, excuse me, into place. You know, it wasn't like it had to be really precise or anything. And that was kind of my first one. And that was actually with flux at that time, flux wire. And it worked fine for what it was. And then I didn't do any welding for about 10 years. And so recently I've just tried to pick it up again. And this time I got gas and have been going about it that way. But yeah, fully self-taught, which shows in my welding.
Well, you're very good at editing then. So it looks okay. Like you know what
I'll
you're
take that.
Doing. Yeah, I haven't done any videos about it yet because I actually took a class, but it was a very basic class, and there's the same place is offering a 6-hour like spend a whole Saturday with us welding kind of thing. And I thought, okay, I'll do that. And then we'll move on from there. But
yeah,
there's
I'd
definitely
like to
some
do
stuff
something like that. That would be cool.
I'm planning on building another portable pizza oven, and it'll involve welding some angles and stuff to hold the different pieces of brick. And then it'll be fired by four charcoal chimney starters, I think.
Oh, wow.
So that'll involve a little bit more than my usual kind of construction. So I thought, well, I better get my act together here. So
yeah. And like, you know, taking a class, I mean, you'll learn a bunch of stuff that you won't stumble upon by playing around like I'm doing. You know, somebody that actually knows what they're doing, giving you like little tips and stuff, will probably add up a lot quicker than just like hoping you end up learning how to kind of do it on your own. So.
Yeah, and they're a collective, so it's not like it's not even a college or a community college. It's these guys that have this warehouse by the Gowanus Canal, you know.
Probably a good place to learn it.
When you come to town, we'll take you there.
Okay, sounds good.
So, the other thing I really liked to kind of go on a tangent is you're kind of taking this nuts and bolts stuff and you're melding it with computer technology, and you've been using the Arduino. Is it just called the Arduino, or do we call it the Arduino board in some of your projects?
Well, there's Arduino is kind of a brand name. But yeah, I mean, they're commonly known as that, but they have a bunch of different specific boards. So.
Yeah. Cause but. In a recent issue of Make Magazine, they had a breakdown of all the different kind of controllers, and I got kind of overloaded with it, but they did have a neat project that you could make and download from Make to take any kind of powered speakers and turn them into iTunes AirPlay speakers. And I thought I'd try that as a starting point for something.
Yeah, that would be a good way to get started. I always tell everybody, especially when it comes to like a techno or a skill or something that you don't know, is to like find a project that you would actually use, something that's going to, you know, fill a need in your house or whatever, and then learn as you need to get that thing accomplished. Because if you know, if you give somebody an Arduino or a welder for that matter, and you just say like, here, learn how to do this, like you have no goal, you have no end point, you have no like, okay, I can check this off as I learned a thing, unless you have some sort of a checklist that you're saying, in the end, if my project does this, then I know that I've succeeded or I failed or I've learned or, you know, something. So yeah, like a project like that would be awesome, because then you can, when it's done, if it plays music, then you did a good job.
That's you know? How we know it works.
Exactly. That's what you want.
The other one out there is a beehive monitor, because I have a bee yard. And what's key in bee health is temperature and humidity and weight of the hive. Mm. And there's a couple of homemade rigs out there using Arduino or Raspberry Pi to do all that. The issue becomes the scale, because evidently electronic scales are fickle in cold weather or hot weather, and they're not, you have to constantly recalibrate them, so that it's not the most reliable thing in the world.
Yeah, I guess that would be an issue. You guys have up there, you have a pretty big swing in temperature throughout the year, so I guess that would be kind of an ongoing battle to fight.
Yeah, just a little. I'll stick with the AirPlay speakers to start out with, because I have these like old computer speakers sitting here with a little subwoofer and everything.
Yeah.
And I don't want to throw them out. I'm like, wow, if I could make those AirPlay, I could put that down where the treadmill is and, you know,
yeah,
making something out of nothing.
Yeah. As far as the Arduino, though, like it is totally overwhelming. Like, I know what you mean, because if you like try to Google to get started or something, there's so much information, which is a good thing, but it's also like, where do you start, you know? And even which board. I would say that if somebody was trying to get started, the Arduino Uno is the one. If you think of an Arduino in your head, you're thinking of an Uno. That's right. Like the most common kind of one that everybody thinks of. And I think that might have been the first model that they had. I'm not exactly sure. But then all the other ones are just some variation of that. You know, they have more processing power or more inputs and outputs, or they have less, or they have wireless, or they have, you know, they have some other thing added onto them to make them a little bit more specific use. But that's the one that, you know, you can get and do a whole lot of stuff with. And the way that I get those, honestly, because they're about, you know, 20, 25 bucks a piece.
Yep.
And I was saying Arduino is a brand name, and the interesting thing about that is that they open sourced their design when they first started. It's been an open source board. And so anybody can take that design, make their own board and manufacture it and just give it a different name, and that's okay. Like, they're not legally, that's fine, right? They just can't call it Arduino. So that has happened millions of times. People have built their own boards that are very similar or almost identical and put them out under different names. And so instead of, if you don't want to spend, you know, $20, $25 on an Arduino, you can go to any number of websites and find a Chinese produced version of the exact same thing for $2 or $3 a piece.
I saw that the other day when I was searching around, and there was like a $5 board out there, and I was like, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of options. I think the Uno is a good, safe, kind of guaranteed way to start. But because a lot of these knockoffs or these clones, like they're called, have some kind of weird, quirky stuff, like, you know, sometimes a trace won't be connected like it should be, or some, you know, just weird little things. And if you're just getting started, those weird little things can be, you know, like either I'm doing this or I'm not doing this.
Kind like of a deal breaker, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's, I don't know that that's where you want to start, but like for me, what I'll do, I have a couple of the genuine Arduino ones that I use for prototyping. And then when I go to put like a project together and I want to leave the Arduino in it, I'll take one of my $3 boards and just swap out the board and embed it in the project. Because, I mean, you could go through the hassle of actually making a duplicate circuit that does what you need it to do instead of using an Arduino board and, like, put your code onto this little chip. Like, you can go that route, and technically it's cheaper when you do that. But, you know, if you're buying these things for $2 or $3 a piece,
yeah,
that's a lot of hassle that's unnecessary. And I get that in my comments all the time. They're like, wow, are you really going to leave that board in that, you know, quiz game that you made for your kids or whatever? And I'm like, yeah, it's cheap, you know, why wouldn't I?
If someone was going to start out, is there a website or a source you suggest for so to start out with?
Actually, the Arduino site is the best one that I've found. I mean, there's tons of options. Make Magazine has a lot of really good articles and stuff, but it's almost kind of overwhelming. But arduino.cc is the official brand site. And if you go there, you can download the software that you need to get started. That's like the legit, you know, branded software. And they also have tons of tutorials and examples. And so you can grab one of those example codes. It gives you all the code you need. It gives you a layout schematic. And so really, you could get started with knowing nothing, with having no idea what you're doing. You could get all the resources you needed right there to do something and have a little win. And if you do that, then you have a working, you know, blinking LED or something. And then you can look at the code and be like, why is this blinking? You can start learning what the code does and what it's saying, you know, by seeing the effect in the real world. So, Arduino's actual website's probably a great place to start.
You had a video recently where you were talking about a specific kind of hard drive. I think you're doing a giveaway. And you mentioned that with that, and I think with an Arduino, you could make your own cloud server. Was that right?
Well, that was with a Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
And so the big difference there is that the Arduino is, it's not really running an operating system. It's more like running a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just doing a set of instructions over and over and over. The Raspberry Pi is actually a full-on Linux computer.
Okay.
And it's running Linux. You can surf the web on it. You can send email through it. You can play music. You can run a home media server. I mean, it's a computer. And so in that case, you know, once you have Linux installed, then you have this whole new world of applications you can install and interact with, you know, inputs and outputs and circuits and, you know, sensors and all sorts of stuff. It's like a whole nother level of kind of complexity and opportunity. And so in that case, I was doing a giveaway for these hard drives because in the Raspberry Pi world, one of the issues is there's a voltage limit for how much voltage you can carry through the Pi itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you add a USB drive, it needs its own power source. And so that particular product was one that kind of solved that problem. You know, it merged the power sources between the two things. And so it was nothing other than a a USB hard drive, but they had figured out a way to handle the power better. So,
because I was intrigued, because I use for my website, I use Amazon Web Services, and you know, mm-hmm. it's cached all over the world. But there's still this part of me that wants to own my own cloud server. You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you had one of those, it would be pretty limiting as far as processing power, and you would end up having a lot of people being like, wow, your website's really slow.
Yeah.
But it's been amazing, though. I've seen, you know, those have been around for several years now, and there have been tons of people who have built like a cluster. At, you know, you have 20 or 50 Raspberry Pis all working together because they're running Linux. This mm-hmm. is really easy to do. And so you create this like cluster cloud computer that is actually super powerful and, you know, in total costs like $200 or something. So if you wanted to go that route, you could certainly run your own server pretty efficiently.
I love that. I mean, my Amazon bill is probably about $4 a month. So
yeah, yeah,
I'll just keep it at that. Yeah. All right. So Arduino. And the other thing, this is kind of off on a tangent here, but one of your most recent videos is totally on the analog side, and that you made a water balloon cannon for your kids. How did that go over?
It was great. They loved it, and they still love it.
Yeah, I noticed all the pictures are of you using the toy, and I was like, is it really for the kids or is it really for Bob?
Well, yeah, it's kind of both. But actually, that was most of that was me having to film while they were at school, so I had to like get it done. But yeah, we've had some fun with it. It's still not quite warm enough here to do the water balloon, like an actual water balloon.
Yep.
So once we get the pool open back there, and I'm sure it's gonna be a lot of stuff shooting around in the backyard this year.
I like it how you make it all really approachable. I mean, you know, you're a dad, you have three boys, and you're in your backyard, and there's this like techie part where yeah, you can put together a little computer, or you can, you know, make something that's part of the playground in the backyard, which I really like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm like super blessed to be in a position to where I get to decide what I do, you know, every yep. day, and that's pretty amazing. It fits my personality really well because I just have varied interests all over the place. And if I tried to go too far down any of those rabbit holes, I would get either like lost or burn out or something. So it's really nice that I can, you know, do something that's just about the kids. And that gives me a chance to do something with them and for them. And I know so many parents who watch YouTube. And so it's a way that I can do something that would be, you know, something they could do with their kids. I mean, that's a big motivator in doing things like that. And then, you know, doing some of the more technical stuff it's just scratching a different itch, you know, for me, my developer background and I just love gadgets and stuff too. So
yeah, me yeah, here.
It's pretty awesome that I just get to like bounce around and do whatever.
I just recently did a purge of gadgets.
Oh, no.
And I live in New York City, so you put it out on the stoop, and 7 minutes, it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
I put a router out there, and I never used it, and it was like, boom, gone. I was like, okay, it's been recycled somewhere.
So. Well, if you're going to get into Arduino stuff, here's a tip. Anytime you get rid of electronics, keep the power supply, and just put them in a box. And then when you go to create an Arduino project, you're going to need a 5-volt power supply, probably. You may need more, depending on what you're doing. But so every time I get rid of some, like an old router or an old, you know, hard drive or anything like that, I'll just grab that power supply and drop them in a box. And then I go, anytime I want to do a project, I've got one there and I don't have to order it, you know.
Oh, sweet. Save some landfill space.
Yeah, definitely.
So the last thing I wanted to bring up was something that you had mentioned. Did you mention on your Making It podcast, but you're using a new organization app called Trello?
Yeah, I have talked about it on the podcast a bit. And I first heard about it, I think, from Tim Schmoyer. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure where I...
He's great.
Oh, he is great. Yeah, I found it and tried it and then just dove in headfirst. It's become a really big part of my process now.
It looks like a mashup of Evernote and Pinterest.
Huh. I hadn't thought of it that way. See, I was a big Evernote user.
Yes, I am. And then you mentioned Trello, and I was like, I got to check that out.
Evernote just got totally overwhelming for me. I mean, I know you can search for anything at any time, but it was like I would go in and like I don't remember exactly what I'm searching for. There's no organization. I have like notebooks, but they're really loose, and sometimes I would have notebooks with one thing in them, and you know, and I still use Evernote, but the way that I've used it, the way that I use it now is a lot different because of Trello. And so the way I use Trello is, anybody who's listening that doesn't, is not aware of it, you have, it's a list building app. And so you have these boards. It's just like, you know, as if you had this board on your wall. You have a board and then you have lists. And within those lists, you have cards. And the cards can be anything, photos or text. They can have checklists or whatever you want them to have. So I've got separate boards for separate things, which are kind of top level organization. And then within that, I have a bunch of lists. So like looking at mine right here, I've got one board that's a project schedule. And it's the entire year, a list for each month of the year, and then a card for each project. And so as I schedule out what I'm going to be making for my videos, I'll just drop a card into this list and I'll put a due date on it. And that helps me understand, like, if I'm doing something that's going to go live in a month from now, you know, I can work back from that date and, like, mm-hmm. understand what I have to prepare and what I have to get ready and how much time I have to shoot and all that stuff. So I use it that way. I also use it for sponsors. I have a separate one that is also a month for every year, and I put in the sponsors list, and it's just a name and a number, but that shows me like what I'm projecting for income from sponsors every month. So I know like where I have slots that I can put new sponsors or, and then I have one that's just tasks, a bunch of different types of tasks are grouped in different lists. And then I have, let me look at it here. I have one that's just project ideas where I dump like all the crazy ideas.
Like a brain dump place.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I sort those out. You know, I pull from that page, that board, when I go to fill out the project schedule. And this is, people always laugh at this, but on my project ideas board, I have several lists and everything just goes in here and then I sort it. So I have an incoming list where everything just goes. And then I have a definitely list, which is stuff that I know I could actually pull off that I want to do that would make good video. I have a maybe, which is maybe stuff. And then I have a list called totally bananas, which is stuff that I will probably never do. And it, you know, may not even be possible, but they're like ideas that I don't want to forget.
So, yeah. I mean, who knows, in a year they might have some magic thing that comes out and then you can do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, you know, I meet somebody that has the skill set to help do one of these and we can collaborate on it or something. You know, I don't want to throw away those ideas. So
cool. Yep. Well, neat. Well, so to wrap up here, I kind of asked this question of a lot of people, but you're going into this and deciding to create these videos on YouTube. I was wondering what you were expecting. And then now that you've been in it for a while, what's kind of the takeaway? What was different and better about it?
As far as what I was expecting, I mean, when I started making these videos, it was really about me. I needed to get back in the shop and do some things with my hands for my own sanity. You know, it was the just kind of some personal time that I needed to be able to kind of reinvest in myself, you know, with four kids and a busy life.
Yep.
It's just got to do that. And so making the videos was really a way for me to justify that time to myself. To say like, well, if I'm going to spend this time doing these things, I need a product or I need something out of it that I can share with other people so that somebody is getting value out of me spending this time here and not with my family or sometimes with my family or however it worked out. So that was the original plan, was that, you know, the purpose of it was to be able to share something and so I could place some value on that time. And it's snowballed out of control and turned into a whole different thing than I originally expected it to, which is amazing. And so now, you know, I have a kind of a different or an expanded mission for it. What was the second part of the question?
Well, basically, what's your takeaway after been doing it for a while?
Oh man, lots of takeaways.
we could pick two.
Yeah. Let's see. I have a really different, I've learned so much stuff about people.
Yeah.
And about how people interact and I don't want to say the psychology of the world, you know, that I'm in, like the video world, but I think it is kind of psychology. I've learned so much about the expectations of people when they approach something that they have no attachment to. So like random person comes across a random video, there's no particular attachment there. I've been really blown away at like the different ways people will react in that situation. So it's opened my eyes a whole lot to some negative stuff and negative behavior in people, but also how connected all of us can be given the right opportunity. So like just the DIY and the making world can take two people that have entirely different lives, entirely different beliefs and you know, trajectories and all this stuff, and it can put those people in the same place to where they have something in common, which is awesome, because then, you know, conversations start and friendships form and just relationships happen and groups happen and collaboration happens and all this stuff that I never expected to see. But now I see all this good coming out of, I'm not saying that all this good coming out of like what I'm doing, but what this group, what this community online is creating.
Yeah. It gives you hope for the future.
It really does. It's unbelievable how many relationships I've seen grow just out of having video or having online presence in common. It's really awesome. And that's one of those things that I really did not expect to see, you know, didn't think I didn't look for because I didn't think about it.
Sorry, the phone just went. Well, I actually wanted to riff on that because for the longest time, I was trying to figure out how to build a community at some sort of a site on the web. And then a friend of mine pointed me to a really great article about, I've been always frustrated by my Facebook page. And it said, well, start a Facebook group. And I started this Facebook group. And in 4 days, 500 people joined.
Hmm.
And I realized that these were all Garden Fork fans. And I finally had created a place where they could interact with each other. Because on YouTube, it's a one-to-many, I found.
Right.
And I can email each one of them, yeah. But now they can all talk amongst themselves. So it's been a really kind of a, that's my kind of, my lately, my eyes wide open kind of moment there. And it's just, there's... I just keep politics out of it. And if you kind of remove that, it's amazing what we all have in common, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I've seen some similar groups to that on Facebook where it's very obvious that the people in the group are different in the way that they speak to each other and the way that the things they talk about, you know, you can tell that they're coming from different places and they have different motivations and interests. But the fact that they're in that group is the glue that keeps these people civil and keeps these people like interested in each other, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just so cool. I don't know. I've learned a whole lot about people and the opportunity we have to interact with people in a positive way and to bring out the best in the people by giving them our best in what we produce. And I've just learned a lot of stuff that I never thought I would learn in doing this.
Well, cool. Well, all right. Well, thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Wow, what a nice talk with Bob. A big thank you to him for taking the time to do that. Again, his YouTube channel is I Like to Make Stuff, and the website name is the same, iliketomakestuff.com. He is one of three makers that have a podcast called Making It. And that, I think, is a good podcast for you all to listen to. They are all three of them, Jimmy, David, and Bob, are people that I look up to and inspire me to go out and make stuff and make Garden Fork better than it is right now. So thanks for listening. If you're on iTunes, would you write us a review? That really helps us and helps other people discover Garden Fork. And I always like to hear from you guys. The email address is radio@gardenfork.tv. That's radio@gardenfork.tv. All right, make it a great day. I'll see you later. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.